parliamentarian, and we have the board members. Thanks for coming out. As you'll notice, we do not have a quorum, but we do not have to vote on anything today, but we are going to conduct a meeting. So at this point, I'd like to have everybody rise for the Pledge of Allegiance, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. So I'm just reminding myself to silence my devices and same for other folks. So thank you, everybody. So the advisory, we'll have the board members roll call. We've kind of done that unofficially, but the parliamentarian would take the roll call.
Mr. Chairman?
Present.
Mr. Vice Chairman?
Present.
Board Member Kim Davis is excused. Luke Dyer? Jamal Lampkin? Saif Khan?
Here.
Demetrius Mack is excused. Eric Perez? Steve Dazzell?
Here.
Cecil Boyd. Claudia Treadwell.
Present.
Donald Brooks. Prince Brooks.
Present.
Jock Patterson. Ernest Postel. Joe Wynn. Herman Preston. Sidney Locks.
Okay. Thanks, Sidney. So at this point, we can move to a special guest. We have a couple special guests. We'll start with Mr. Clifton Lewis of the U.S. Vets Initiative, and then we'll move to our guest from So Others May Eat. Oh, is that the right order? Yes. Ms. Clara Booker and Denise Daly. And then we'll have Ben Cattell-Noll from Friendship Place. So, Mr. Lewis, if you... present. Thank you.
Okay, do you want me to stand up front or stand? How do you want me to?
Yeah, thank you. We have a microphone.
Okay,
thank you. Here. Yes, sir. And also, just to remind everybody that with the Open Government Act, we are recording the board meeting. And thanks for your participation in this session. And we welcome board members. We also have the public here as well. And this is important, for us to be able to serve our role and advisory capacity and make a difference for veterans in the district. So
okay.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis.
Hey, thank you. I want to thank the committee for inviting me here today just to tell you a little bit about my organization. My name is Clifton Lewis, and I am the executive director of the United States Veterans Initiative, Washington, D.C. Our organization is the largest nonprofit organization in the country to serve veterans and veterans at risk. We're headquartered in Los Angeles. We have sites, 11 sites around the country. We have 3 sites in L.A., 3 sites in Hawaii, 1 site in Las Vegas, 1 site in St. Louis, 2 sites in Phoenix, and, of course, here in Washington, D.C., we have our site. Our Grand Per Diem program opened up back in February 2015. It's an 85-bed transitional facility which services homeless veterans. It's a co-ed building, services both men and women. Our program was awarded the Pete Daugherty Award for Excellence in Supportive Services Program by the Home Depot and the National Coalition of Homeless Veterans. We're very proud of that. We're also part of the Coordinated Entry System that Friendship Place is a part of, that's hosted by the VA and the local continuum of care, the Community Partnership. Our veteran services include our DOL grant through the Department of Labor, Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program. We have a SSVF program, a supportive services for veteran families that serve as veterans. We have a Call of Duty Initiative program. We have a permanent housing program, of course, our transitional housing program. Even though we've only been in the district for 10 years, we have the whole portfolio of programming for veterans, which means we have a one-stop shop type of system and programming at our facility. So when a veteran hits our doors, he can receive everything that he or she needs at our organization. So we're very proud of where we are. We've been doing this for the last 25 years, even though we've only been here for 10 years. But our organization has been in existence for 25 years, serving veterans and veterans at risk. The whole coordinated entry system is looking at the rapid rehousing model. U.S. Vets is definitely a part of that conversation. But we also want to note that transitional housing is important and can also be a part of that process, and that veterans oftentimes like or enjoy living in the communal living situation, which is what our transitional housing program offers. And we just want to let the community know that we are here to serve our veterans, and that we're building new programs and building, adding on new programming to our portfolio. Have any questions? No. Okay. Yes, sir.
City Locks Ward 4. A couple questions. Number one, how do veterans?
Sydney, you need to speak in the mic because we can't hear you.
Oh, big mouth. Sorry. How do veterans get connected with U.S. Vets in terms of those all over the city who have homeless issues, transition issues? You had a couple programs. That's one. Secondly, if you could break down the SSVF program.
Sure.
And so that our guests can hear what SSVF means.
Okay.
And get an understanding of those programs. If you
okay. Know. SSVF program stands for Supportive Services for Veterans Families. And how that program works is that veterans are referred to us through direct outreach, through community partners, through veteran service organizations, through our street outreach team. And they can come into that program, and the type of services they can receive is case management services. We do security deposit. We do first month's rent. We do transportation assistance, moving assistance. And that program, we're tasked with serving 400 veterans a year. We have a $2 million budget that's funded through the Department of Veterans Affairs. And what we do is we create relationships with our partners like Friendship Place, and we receive referrals that way through the coordinated entry system.
And how does a veteran get referred?
They could come in through the coordinated entry system, which means that their name go into a local database, and then depending on the type of services that particular veteran needs, then that veteran is referred to us or referred to the service provider that's in their locale or that they choose to go to, or through direct outreach. Our outreach team goes out and bring that veteran into our program.
Okay. Are we able to dial your number there and say this veteran needs help?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We have veterans that come through us through online inquiries. All veterans that inquire through U.S. Vets that want to come to our programs, their email that's sent here to D.C. through U.S. Vets comes to me. And what I do is I send that to the appropriate staff member, using my SSVF coordinator to handle it. All phone calls that come in either come through me or through the SSVF coordinator. And then that person reaches out to the veteran, brings them in for intake, do an assessment on them, ICF initial contact form to determine their eligibility, and then they're enrolled in the program after they complete an orientation.
And Mr. Lewis, thank you for that. Is it okay to, is there a phone number that we could share here on the
Absolutely.
Record?
My number is, and I'm sorry, when my assistant that did my card, she didn't put my telephone number on the card. So my telephone number is 202-407-6338. Again, that's 202-407-6338.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. And also for the record, am I correct that your address is 111 K Street Northeast.
Yes, sir. 111 K Street Northeast. We're on the third floor. That's our administrative office.
Okay. And we have your website as www.usvetsinc.org.
Yes, that's my that's our email address for our organization. And when you go on it, it's our national email address. And you'll see all of our sites throughout the country, from Hawaii, Las Vegas, all the way down to D.C. And there's a link. You click on the link, and then it brings up Washington, D.C., and it shows all the contact numbers of all of the programs that we have and the people that you can call to receive services.
And if there's one thing that you would want the veteran community to know, I'm sorry, and we have a we also have a question from another board member. Mr. Brooks is going to have one, but I wanted to ask a question, too, real quick to follow up. What's the one thing you would want to get out to the community that people may not know or maybe overlooked about your services?
I think the one thing that the community needs to know about U.S. Vets is that we've been doing this for 25 years. So we have a history of serving veterans. We have a history of implementing our therapeutic model. We're the largest nonprofit organization in the country that serves veterans and veterans at risk, and that we have the whole portfolio of programs at our location here in Washington, D.C.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Brooks, board member.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Donald Brooks, board member. How you doing, Mr.
Brooks? Hello, Mr. Brooks. How you doing today?
All right. I just have one question.
Sure.
Are there any preventive funds, which is most of night in dire need now, any preventive funds in your organization? Because that's one of your responsibilities of providing preventing services. Are there any preventing funds available at this time?
At this particular time.
Before you answer that, okay. You have an audience who won't know
what preventive funds are.
Okay.
Okay, preventive funds are.
No. You gotta explain it. Just the question is so they can understand. So if you can explain what preventive funds is, and then it'll make sense.
Okay. So we have two type of fundings, two type of categories in our SSVF program. We have a wraparound housing category and a prevention funds category. And what Mr. Brooks is talking about, that the prevention funds is used for families that come in that just need preventive funding in order to maintain their unit. Wraparound housing funding is funding that we give to veterans that are homeless, straight off the street. So Mr. Brooks is asking, do we have any more prevention funds in our SSVF portfolio? So that's what he's asking. So at U.S. Vets, currently we are in transition between grant cycles. So right now we're trying to spend down the money that we have. We're in a layover, so we're right there in between both funding streams. So at this particular point, we do not have any prevention funds. So what we're doing is we're referring families that come in or veterans that come in and need prevention assistance to our outside community partners until we're able to close down the grant that we're currently in, and then we can use funding for the new grant cycle.
I appreciate that. If your community individuals, Fisher Place Housing Counselor Service, they don't have any. So what is the best route for veterans to go just so that they won't end up in housing and have to come back to you through the front door under the SSVF, under the Rapid Rehousing? And that's what most of the vets that you are seeing now need preventive funds. Mm-hmm. And three of the major grant cycle people who provide those funds are not providing those funds. So what do veterans supposed to do now?
I think that what veterans have been doing, what we did in the past, is folks who need prevention funding, they can come in and apply for us because the grant cycle at this particular point is only 30 days out, which means they can come in and apply even though we don't have any money right now. Also depending on when they need the prevention funding. So if their eviction or their set out is 30 days out, then we can kind of help navigate that, enroll them into our program, and then once the money is released, then we can start paying prevention funds.
I just want to follow up on the question from the board member, Harry Wingo, Ward 4. So the question would be, how many veterans are you typically able to help over the 10 years that you've been here? Say if we look at the last year or the past 2 years, follow on, it's an excellent question by board member Brooks. Could you say how many families and about what typical amount for like a month's rent? In other words, like you were able to help 50 families at the amount of maybe given 2,000 or 5,000 of each of those. Does that make sense as a question?
Makes sense. So at this particular point, roughly we were able to serve, the allotment is around $3,000 per family. And during our grant cycle, we roughly serve around 35, 40 families a month. And then once we get to the mid part of the grant cycle, then we have to reevaluate what we have left. Because, of course, during the grant cycle, we have to make sure that we're spending down money appropriately, that we have enough to spend on each family by the time we get to the end of the grant cycle.
And so that's very helpful. That 3,000 and the 35 to 40 per month, wow, that's a lot of folks.
Yeah.
But has it been enough? Like last year, how many, I mean, was that, did that meet? Or were there maybe... that was only half the families that did you have to turn away? So I'm trying
yeah,
to.
Yeah, that, it, no, it's not enough. You know, so at the end of the grant cycle, you know, we have a lot of families who are in the same, in that situation where they need some prevention funds. So what we have to do, again, we have a holdover. So what we do is we hold those families. We work out agreements with the landlords because a lot of the landlords that we work with are second chance landlords. They're partners. So they understand that we're in a holdover stage. So what we do is we hold over the funding and let them know that we have funding and hasn't been released yet. But if you continue to let the family stay, then we'll be able to pay you next month. And that seems to work.
Again, Harry Wingo, Ward 4. I don't want to take up from all, we have another board member who wants to ask a question, but I was actually going to ask, with your indulgence, could maybe the board, if the board agrees, we might like to ask if you would be willing to share a letter with us, maybe outlining maybe the year over year you've seen and then sort of what you need, things that you don't have, and we could consider joining our voices. But I think we really need the information so that we could write a letter if that's appropriate. But we'd like at least to send it, but I'll just stop there. And Stephen?
That was part of my question. Thanks. Board Member Dalzell, Ward 6, to follow up on the chairman's question, do you have any kind of a sense of how many additional families you could have helped if you'd had the necessary resources in the last cycle?
In the last grant cycle, I have to look, I would roughly estimate it to be around about 40 families that we would need to help during that that small break in funding. But I'll have to go back and check the statistical data at my organization. But I would love to generate that letter, and I'm actually anticipating contacting you, Mr. Wingo, because that's been in my plan. But I would definitely love to write that letter and share it with you guys.
Thanks, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Prince Brooks, Ward 4. Hi, Mr. Lewis.
Hello, sir.
First of all, I myself am a formerly homeless vet. Since that time, since my transition time to from homelessness to housed, I've run into quite a few situations that other veterans were in. You know, it's not a one-size-fits-all situation. You know, people have different issues, different sets of issues. The one thing that always troubled me about guys who ended up at U.S. Vets were when they tried to get into the VASH program, as I did, they told me they weren't qualified. Because the program that U.S. Vets call a transition program, somehow in Congress or in the funding authority for housing, it was classified as permanent housing. Mm-hmm. It knocked them completely out of the voucher program, out of the eligibility for the voucher program, and they were standing in a place, sharing a place with three other guys, of whom they didn't like.
So before
and
you
weren't
answer
eligible
that
for
one,
a voucher. Has that been...
Yeah, no, so before you answer, so there's you throw out a lot of nuggets. There's no way that, like, if anybody won't understand, they won't understand VASH program, they're not going to understand the voucher program, the transitional piece, so you threw out a lot of stuff. So what I want, can you break it down and then help everybody understand where
sure.
you are with that? Because I think that was a lot.
Okay. So the HUD VASH program that he's referencing is a program through the Housing Authority, which offers a subsidy for individuals who reside in public housing, like Section 8. So they're responsible to pay 30% of their income toward their rent. So that's the program that he's talking about, HUD VASH. And that particular program is done through a matrix, through an assessment. Our organization don't do that assessment. That assessment is done through the local government, so we have no control over that. And you're right, the government was labeling folks that live in transitional housing as being in permanent residency, but that has now changed. The local continuum of care now looks at transitional housing as transitional.
I'm happy to hear that. Thank you.
I just want to also add, Board Member Brooks, thank you, sir, for sharing your experience. And it may not seem like it seems like a big thing because this is on the record, and we're letting people know that they can find resources, and we commend you for asking questions like that. And there is a lot to unpack, but that's super helpful. And the other thing I would like to ask, too, is on your website, or do we have, I guess for the director question, are these the information that actually does lay out all the different things that someone would have to understand? Is that easy to find on our website? I'm sorry, for
not
the...
our website. No, okay. No, it's not. Not on our website.
How could we...
The continuum of care, which is the community partnership here in the district, just reached out to Department of Housing and Urban Development, where they changed the guidelines as far as folks residing in transitional housing. So now that folks that are residing in transitional housing will be deemed as transitional. Okay. So HUD VASH, you have to go through the VA. You can go through the the CRRC to apply for HUD VASH, or through the Housing Authority to apply for HUD VASH. And then they can, give you that assessment and determine your eligibility.
Okay.
Right. So the continuum that you spoke about, a person in any of your transitional programs is now eligible to apply for and receive permanent choice voucher program vouchers, correct?
In our transitional program, our 85-bed facility, they are, because they're labeled as transitional. They're in our 85-bed transitional facility. They can apply for HUD VASH.
You have many more facilities than
that. No, I have a permanent housing program. We only have one transitional program.
Permanent housing
program. We have one permanent housing program, and we have our transitional housing program. So the transitional housing program is what you're talking about, right?
The program that I'm speaking about is the one that you refer to as the permanent housing program?
Talk about
the permanent housing program.
Permanent housing program, you're correct. The permanent housing program, if you're in that program, then yes, you're deemed to be in permanent housing. But that's a long-term program. It's not the same as HUD VASH, but it's still permanent housing. And it's very limited. It's only 33 participants that are in our permanent housing program. They're usually not looking to get a HUD VASH voucher because they're already in our permanent housing program. And those particular participants have dual diagnosis, both mental health.
Last year, I've had two gentlemen instructed to move out of your permanent housing program, move into a shelter, and that way they got their vouchers because that made them eligible once they moved to the shelter. I left your permanent housing program. Okay. They were sharing an apartment with three other guys.
Okay.
Right? That's your permanent housing program.
Uh-huh.
A person with a voucher has an individual. He's got his own bedroom, his own bathroom, his own living room. He's got his own apartment.
Okay.
He's not sharing an apartment.
So that's what I thought you were talking about, our transitional housing program. But if you're talking about permanent housing, that's correct.
That's
if you're in our permanent housing program, then yes, you are permanently housed and you're not considered living in transitional and you're not eligible for HUD VASH voucher.
I think the problem came because people that went into that program thought that they were going into a transitional program and they were able to access the continuum that would lead them to an individual unit.
Okay.
And
I think, you know, they should have been explained, you know, the type of program and they were getting into. And a lot of the people that are in our permanent housing program have been there for 10 years. That's our longest standing program. So they've been there for a while.
Yeah, one of these guys was there for 5 years.
Yeah.
But he has his own place now.
Yeah.
He's good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And we'll move to Board Member Donald Brooks.
Donald Brooks, Ward 5. I'd just like to say, for veterans who do not meet the discharge status of other VA transitional housing, they are able to go to 64 New York and sign up for vouchers that for veterans and non-veterans so that will alleviate, because VA has certain status about type of discharges that VA, you can go into VA transitional houses. So, and they all, everybody, veterans and non-veterans, those with discharges less than honorable, have to go through do a SPDAT. That's like a housing assessment. It's a VI SPDAT.
Interject real quick because you just threw out a whole bunch of nuggets too for a bunch of people who probably won't even understand. So I need you to take it back 10 notches, right, for me. Just slow down. So what I want Clifton to do is jump in here and Clifton explain the process where the ASPDAT process and then how the vulnerability assessment. So the special guest is Clifton Lewis, and so I need you. You understood what he was saying. So I need you to break it down for everyone because I want everybody here to understand this entire process and how it works.
Okay. So the VASPDAT, that's the assessment tool that I was talking about. So that assessment tool is used by Housing Authority and the VA to determine a veteran's eligibility for HUD VASH voucher. And it depends on the score. If it's higher than 12, then they're eligible. And that's a number of questions that they would have to answer in order to determine their eligibility.
I would say, and thank you, Director, I think at this point, thank you, Mr. Brooks, we would also invite you to share slides. And I know there's a website that we're being directed to, but we can always enter things into the record.
Absolutely.
And also, I want to clarify, I opened up something for the Director. I'm smiling because we have to put out there as a reminder, the board, we can ask anything that is going to help veterans. But we have to remember the TAMI and there's a smaller set of things, and you can point people to, but we have to remember that TAMI's part of a larger team. And so, you know, we have a wider ranging, scope that we can do on this board. But TAMI, actually, if it's not on her on her webpage, she doesn't know who to point to. But I think we would encourage, I think as a board, right, we would encourage for there to be even stronger links, right, so that somebody could go and find out the information and make sure that we're continuing to collaborate
and point to the resources that are out there. I just want to make sure we move on at this point, and hope, unless there's other pressing thing from another board member.
Okay. I also want to say that our transitional facility has been highlighted. CNN came out last week to do a segment. Wow. They're going to air it on Veterans Day. Even though we've only been open since 2015, February 2015, we are awarded the Pete Daughtry Award for Excellence in Supportive Housing Programming by the Home Depot Foundation and the National Coalition of Homeless Veterans. So even though we're new, we're plugging away, serving our veterans, and we're being recognized.
Thanks, Mr. Lewis. And actually, on that note, I know there's going to be, and rightly so, celebrations, for Veterans Day.
Yes, sir.
Is there anything you'd like to invite folks to?
I would love for you guys to come out to our transitional facility on Veterans Day. We're having a cook-off. We're having celebrity chefs come out. Chef Tate from Hell's Kitchen will be there, along with our food vendor. We have another celebrity guest, Chef Lightfoot, that will be there. So we would love for you to come out and join in the activities at our transitional facility.
And if it's appropriate, I think, Director, if you'd have any interest, I'm sure, we could share that information with folks. So you already have
them.
See, already ahead of me. Okay. Thanks, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
At this point, we'll move to our guests, Clara Booker and Denise Daly from So Others May Eat.
Ask them to come up there to that mic.
Oh, yeah. If you don't mind, please, there's a microphone for you there.
Just being over
both, so.
Good afternoon.
It's not on.
Hello.
Push button so your green light comes on.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Clara Booker. I am the program manager for Fendel Heights. We are our all-veteran housing program through So Others Might Eat. Our relationship started back in 2013. We opened our doors, and we are able to house 28 veteran families. We have 1 and 2 bedroom units at our property, and that allows us to service single males, females, married couples, and then 1 and 2 parent households.
And ma'am, I just want to make sure we got the name of your organization you're associated with, So Others Might Eat.
So,
but if you wouldn't mind, could you repeat the name of your Fendel branch? Or,
so you can show how the relationship between SUM and Fendel Heights and explain.
Absolutely. Okay. So yes, I am associated with SUM, So Others Might Eat, and we have several programs throughout the district, and one of those programs is Fendel Heights, which is our veteran program.
Thank you.
We are under Family Services. We are 1 of 6 family housing programs that serve homeless families in the city, but the only veteran portion is with Fendel Heights.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We do our best to provide wraparound services for our veterans as well as their families. We have our case manager, Ms. Daly, who's going to speak in a little bit about the work that she does with our veterans. We have an after-school program for our children. We have an on-site therapist. We try to meet the needs of our veterans as best as possible. But, again, this is a relatively new relationship, so we're discovering new things every day, things that we didn't consider. And so it's been a very exciting challenge, but we are definitely up to it as we continue to expand.
Thanks, Ms. Booker. And also, could you spell Fendel Heights?
Yes, Fendel, Fendall, Heights,
I'm sorry.
No problem.
Thank you, Mr. Fendel.
Oh, I'm sorry. And let me just add as well, because we spoke about the HUD-VASH, that is who we are with, but we're project-based. So our veterans come from the CRRC. We actually have some veterans that attend our dining hall, and they'll be referred over to myself. We've received a couple of referrals from USVets as well, so we have a very open pool for referrals.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Denise Daly. Like Ms. Booker said, I'm the Family Service Case Manager for Fendel Heights. I have about 20 families that I work with on a monthly basis. We meet once a month to discuss their financial situations, and I like to touch on their biopsychosocial, emotional, and family health as well. One thing that I've really enjoyed working with the program is how our veterans are able to access supportive services once they establish housing. we can't force them to take those services, but we are able to offer them to them. U.S. Vets, the CRC, the VFW, and also the Disabled American Veteran Association. They've all been very helping hands in helping our veterans and also their families. The VFW recently provided our children with book bags and school supplies, and it wasn't old tattered stuff. It was brand new materials, and so that's really hard to come by when you're talking about donations. Ms. Booker told you all the great things that So Others Might Eat is doing for veterans, but there are also a lot of challenges, and I'll say that as a case manager, I meet close to 4 MST victims a week. We are not able to take every veteran who is homeless. We have had veterans come in who have been abused in shelters, and they're not eligible for our program. So they have to go back to that same unfortunate situation. And we've really seen a lot of challenges when it comes to supplemental resources, substance abuse. That is a huge challenge in our community. And just working with any veterans, there are very high numbers of substance abuse with this new Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom population. I can show you the stats. There's a 25% increase in alcohol abuse with this new veteran population. And one thing that I've noticed is that with all the research that's available, we really don't see that reflected in the type of programs that are available in the D.C. area. And I'll elaborate more on that, and I'll try to hit on the biopsychosocial, emotional, and family impact that it has. So as far as the biology part behind the services that are available for veterans right now, there's not that many nutritional resources available to our veterans. Some of our vets, because of their VA subsidies and VA benefits, they're only available to have, what, $16 to $30 worth of food stamps. That's not enough.
I'm sorry, for what amount of time?
That's on a monthly basis. They're often denied SNAP benefits and TANF because of their VA income. We've got a lot of families surviving on less than $300 worth of income. And we know that stress depletes really important neurotransmitters like acetylcholine, norepinephrine, epinephrine, dopamine, and serotonin. Those things regulate concentration, their ability to focus, their ability to go to school and get the most out of their education, their ability to commit to jobs, really. Doing all of those things without the right nutritional resources is very difficult for them.
Ms. Daly, this is yeah, it's hard to hear this, but it's good to hear it. But the question I have, when you just said going to school, you made me think of one of the more important partners. There's lots on the education front. I think of UDC. So do you have any track record with UDC?
We have no relationship with UDC, from the best of my knowledge.
The free programming that's available for D.C. residents, some of our residents, our veterans have participated in.
Okay. And that's why I was asking, because on this particular thing, I'm wondering maybe if you don't have a track record on that very issue of concentration, success rates, how much a veteran coming back and deciding they want to further their education, which we all support and want to be part of that. But it just made me think, and I see some nods and I take some questions on this. What I'm trying to say is there an opportunity to look specifically at some of that extra wraparound care for someone trying to educate themselves? And if it turns out that, you know, some aspect of care and the medical side of things, it seems like that would be something we could drill down on. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. And I'd like to see that. I think all of us can agree that accessing healthy foods like blueberries to help with their concentration, fish to help with their sleep, turkey to help with their concentration and ability to focus, all of these really expensive foods they're not able to obtain based on the amount of money they get through SNAP. And so I think some of the best produce and some of the best nutritional value comes from things that are way out of their budget. And I can vouch for that. It doesn't really matter how much couponing they do. They still can't get a month's worth of food on $22.
Sir. Mr. Brooks?
Yes, Donald Brooks, Ward 5. I'm familiar with Fender House, but what is the nucleus of your, what you consider your family nucleus? You know, is the husband eligible to stay in the facility, or, you know, with the wife and the kids? Or, and my second question, I think it would be, Fender House could even be more effective if they reached out to the community partners for the things that they lack in or can't do. About getting personal, I think, especially the ones that are having trouble adjusting for the mental health and employment, and even, like you say, the school, because with UDC starting this new program to, and, you know, enhance more district residents to take advantage of their facilities, and with a lot of them, they don't have to pay to go through the, so I think that that would expand your reach into the community and give you more resources to combat some of the issues that you're dealing with, even referring them up to the CRC with a referral form for the community partners for employment and stuff. That would make you look like you're bigger than you are.
And so let me just, sitting locks here, Wolf, let me just add to what he's saying there. And let me get some basic information here, because I think as community partners, one of the things that a lot of us are missing is how do we refer? How do we get people to your door to get them help? How do you take referrals besides community partners? So you mentioned VFW, DAV. How are they able to send folks to you? Do they call a number? How do we get that information? All that good stuff.
So I am actually the contact person for our veterans. And our applicants, so I can definitely give my number and extension, which is 202-797-8806, and the extension is 1451.
Okay. And as we talk about veterans and family care, how long are veterans, individual or family, as you've already expressed, how long are they able to stay in your program? If you're doing month-to-month care, do you guys provide yearly pieces, yearly substantial care for them, and then after a certain amount of time, that care goes down? Or do you, what's the breakdown of how long you provide how much care? Because what we're also finding as we've been individuals is we need collections of information to send people to the right place at the right time to the right people. And if I have the wrong person at the right time, I'm still wrong because I can't help that veteran. So this is a long question. It's probably a question that's going to come to everybody who presents to us, because number one, we across the city need to provide the information, period. I'm responsible. Chairman is responsible. The director is responsible. And so there's a call now on how long can the people stay there? And then going back to Donald Brooks, one of my favorite board members' question is, when we look at the people staying there now, how do you work with partners to bring it all together as one? U.S. Vets brought up terms of in-between cycles. Just giving an example, sometimes we have to use community partners to provide services until we bring the cycle back in. That's just the way money goes. But from Fender House so others may eat, how long can families stay there? And then how do we help you to bring in partners to maybe close in some ends, maybe come back to U.S. Vets, maybe go back to VFW, DAV, and say we need some more book bags in the middle of the year? How do you do that?
Can I interject something here? Sorry. To kind of keep an eye on time just a little bit, and I think what Sydney is asking is very important, so I don't want to I do want you all to answer. But as we mentioned earlier with U.S. Vets Initiative, something that all organizations that are visiting might consider providing for us before, or, you know, since you're here now, in the future for the board members to review is a slide deck that answers some of these questions. You know, what are your services? What eligibility do veterans need to have to be able to get to them? How do we refer people to them. What do you need outside of referring veterans? What do you need? What could we, you know, what could we get community organizations involved with besides, you know, ourselves? So are you looking for those school supplies or are you looking for canned goods? You know, I mean, like that's, so I want you to answer what Sydney is asking, but if you could also take that back and maybe provide something to us, and that would go for you as well, Mr. Lewis, and Ben, I'm sorry, I'm not even going to try to pronounce your last name, but, you know, if so, you all could provide those for us, that would be absolutely very helpful.
So let me just be clear. So when I asked them to come and speak and talk about this, I didn't tell them to bring a slide deck because what I really wanted, I wanted it to be more of a personal kind of a panel so you can ask the questions because each of them provide very different services for very different, although they're veterans, but different populations, and their services are all different, uniquely different. However, I think that they all accept people from the CRRC. So I just kind of wanted the board to have an understanding of how the programs work. It's not as simple as just picking up a phone all the time and getting a person in housing. So the process can be somewhat, how do you want to say, there you go. So I can ask them to prepare a slide deck for you all, but I really wanted y'all to kind of get a grasp of really the challenges that are facing this particular community, and the services that they provide. So it was important to have someone who represent families, someone who single veterans in his, and then I know that you work, with singles as well, right? So, and then I wanted y'all to understand the vulnerability piece. How are they assessed? So there's a lot of things in here. So I don't want you to ask like real deep questions because I know that both Brooks understand that. But I really want the board to get the foundation and understand the process and how it works and how we're also a part of that Veterans Now group that works together so that we can do the best that we can as far as, housing veterans and meet the goal that the mayor has is ending veteran homelessness by 2015. So I apologize for that, but I'll ask them for.
Pamphlets. That way, you know, we can have something, you know, show that brochures or pamphlets. You know, maybe not necessarily slides, but I think if you're bringing your organization to that represent veterans to the board, you know, to us board members, we'd like to see something.
So it was my fault. They'll have something for the next time. Okay, so we can go ahead and continue.
Yeah, and also, if I may, just on the director's behalf, or actually just to remind folks, yes, you're absolutely right, because we're this board, what I'm excited about is this board is just so ready to get down to business. If you put us on the beach, we're already looking, we're way off of it, right? So that's, but we really appreciate your coming in. And I think in the interest of time, unless there's more questions, we're going to move on to our third special guest. But, what I would like to say, thank you very much. We look forward to working with you, and we will definitely be in contact. And this is very helpful, Ms. Booker, Ms. Daly. You know, again, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. Thank you, ma'am.
And also, I'm going to have them at least try to come visit each one of your facilities. I think that it's important that they, put eyes on each one of these facilities. So you'll probably get more intimate time with them at that point. But I thank you. I thank you both for coming and sharing. And so I want the board to really be understanding. So Mr. Brooks and so we have a new set of board members, and then we have those who've been in the community for a while. So when we ask our questions, let's just, you know, be considerate of that. So what I don't want to do is that I want the new board members to miss anything. So if you can just be, you know, a little considerate of that, because Harry and all them don't know what you all know, right? So be mindful when you ask your questions that they're learning this process. That's the reason why they're here.
Yeah, but we love those questions too. So that's right, exactly. Because we know members. We just joined on the team that's already moving, so we're catching up. Don't worry. But thank you, Tammy. And so thank you, Ms. Booker and Ms. Daly. And then now we have our final guest, Ben Cattell Noel from Friendship Place. And also, just to let everybody else know, we're going to go. We're going to approve the agenda next, the minutes. The rest of it will, the director's report. That shouldn't take more than, yeah, okay. Yeah, so after we get done with our last guest, you know, it may not even take the whole 30 minutes. I know we have a lot of time going until 8 o'clock. On the wall, it's hasn't been adjusted for time for daylight savings. But we'll just move with Ben.
Yes, thank you. Good evening, everybody, and thank you for having us. My name is Ben Cattell-Knoll. I'm a project coordinator with the Veterans First program at Friendship Place. We are also a Supportive Services for Veteran Families, or SSVF, grantee, serving the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, including the district as well as the surrounding counties in Maryland and Virginia. We have a $2 million grant as well, Mr. Clifton Lewis shared, as well as we are also a surge grantee through the VA. We received in April of 2015 a $3 million surge grant that will carry over for the next 3 years to provide services to homeless veterans. We have about 24 staff members, the vast majority of whom are case managers working in our Veterans First program. We also have employment specialists, a legal and benefits specialist, outreach staff, and intake staff, as well as our management. In fiscal year 2014, which just ended last month, we were able to serve 580 people. So that's inclusive of single veterans as well as families. So that's all the people served. Actually, 111 of those 580 people were children that we provided services to. And 93% of those people exited our program into permanent housing. So the vast majority of them were able to enter housing. And of those who did not enter permanent housing, the vast majority of those were entering either temporary situations with family or returning to transitional housing programs. So very few ended up back on the streets or in shelters, which we're very proud of. Yes, please.
Sure. Are there one or two or three wards that represent more than half of your...
That's a good question, and I don't know. Typically, we do we ask for... It varies because I would say last year, I believe about 50% of our people were entering from unsheltered locations who were experiencing literal homelessness. So those folks were typically moving around quite a bit. We see a lot of veterans staying in their cars. That's quite common. But there are also folks who are in encampments, sleeping on the streets, in parks, in the airports around the community. And then about a quarter are coming from transitional housing programs and about a quarter from the shelters, mostly either from Adams Place Shelter or New York Avenue Shelter or CCNV. So those are primary shelters that folks come from. So, I mean, those wards are going to be overrepresented because of folks coming from the shelters. But I don't want to spend too...
I'm sorry, just for the record, if you could, which wards are those represented by? Adams Place, New York Avenue Shelter, CCNV.
That's a great question. Ward 4, I believe?
801 is Ward 8.
Yeah.
New York is Ward 5.
5.
Adams Place is Ward 5. CCNV is... What's that, Ward 2?
2, I believe.
Ward 2.
Or 1. It might be 1 still.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Ben, question.
Yes.
Seth Kahn, Ward 2. Do you guys have any preventative funding at the moment?
Prevention. So we have made a decision as an organization this year to prioritize folks who are experiencing literal homelessness. We and the next kind of what I want to talk about, I want to give you all context for what we do as an organization. We're proud of our results. We're proud of what we do. But this is about ending veteran homelessness and nothing else. It's not about our program growing. It's not about how awesome we are. If there are veterans experiencing homelessness in the community, we're not doing our job. And that's really, we're very mission driven, and that's the mission. So we have the capacity to do prevention funds. About 15% of the households we served last year were prevention funds. But the vast majority of the households we take on are folks who are experiencing literal homelessness. And we do that because in order to provide quality services, we limit our caseloads. So our case managers are working with about 15 households at any given time. And so we want to be able to provide the intensive services that are necessary to do that. We are able to help folks from the day they enter our program until they sign that lease and move into housing. That's taking about 53 days. We want to do better, but that is we're actually that's pretty solid at this point, given a tight housing market and about a quarter of the people that we serve having no income at all when they enter our program. So that's. Actually, I think we're feeling pretty good about that.
Victoria Primore, Ward 3. You mentioned how many people you serve, and then you broke it down to, like, households. So could you tell me how many households?
Yes, 413, I believe. A little over 400. So the vast majority are individuals, and that's just – you know, that's indicative of the larger homeless population. We do prioritize families. We also prioritize female veterans. So I think about 12% of the veterans that we serve were female veterans. About 9% of the total veteran population are female, just to give you some context. So we are prioritizing those folks. But Mr. Lewis also mentioned the coordinated entry process, and I think that's really what I want to make sure you all are aware about, because that is the primary force that's moving this effort to end veteran homelessness in the district. I just did a little quick. So coordinatedentry.com is a great place to visit for updates on that. Coordinatedentry.com. That is the Veterans Now group is kind of who's running that. And it's updated relatively regularly. It tracks progress through these very intensive 100-day challenges where we set goals to say how many veterans can we house in 100 days, and also kind of doing some systems change goals around that as well. Since January of 2015, so in this calendar year, January through September was the most recent month we have data for, there were 565 veterans housed in the District of Columbia. The point in time count last year, again, for context, at January, whatever it was, 20th last year, it was approximately, I think it was 499, about 500 veterans were experiencing homelessness at one time. So you will notice that number is, we have housed more than were homeless at a given point in time. That is because people continue to enter homelessness. And so we talk about a functional end to veteran homelessness, which does not mean that a veteran will never become homeless, because housing crises will happen. People will lose jobs. People will get kicked out of a housing arrangement that they have for all kinds of reasons. And so people will continue to fall into homelessness. We know at this time it's approximately 50 folks a month, 50 veterans a month who are entering homelessness in the district. So last month, again, just for a little context sake, 86 veterans were housed in the District of Columbia. So we are making progress towards that goal, but we are not yet there. We are on track to be there. You know, as you mentioned, at the end of 2015, which if you're doing your math is about 6 weeks away.
Great.
We're on track to do it, and you know, we serve D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But on Veterans Day next week, Virginia is ready to declare a functional end to veteran homelessness in the state of Virginia. So we can do it here. It can be done, and we believe very strongly that it can be done. So just to give you a little bit more information on coordinated entry, because you ask about, you know, referrals, how do people get in the door? And this idea of coordinated entry is one that's new and it's growing. If you rewind about 18 months ago, if you wanted to get into services, you needed to call our screening line, hope to catch the right person, and, you know, be a self-advocate. With coordinated entry, we are moving towards a no-wrong-door approach in the District of Columbia. There are well north of 4,000, maybe even over 5,000 now. They mentioned the VI SPDATS. That stands, I'm not even going to try and say what it stands for. But what it is it's an assessment tool. It's about a 50-question questionnaire. And what it does is it assesses vulnerabilities for people remaining homeless. It asks about things like substance abuse history, time spent homeless, incorporates a lot of things about social, because we know that mental health, most people who have mental illness don't ever become homeless. Most people with substance abuse issues never become homeless. So those things can contribute to homelessness, but they're just one of many factors. It also takes into account things like social issues. You know, do people take advantage of you? Do you know where your money is going each month? Those sorts of things. So it asks a lot of questions about that. By the end of this assessment, then you have we can look at a score and say what is the most appropriate intervention for you. Is it rapid rehousing? Is it permanent supportive housing, like was mentioned? So there's been the three leading providers doing those, who have each done about 1,000 assessments, would be the VA, predominantly through the CRRC, DHS, Department of Human Services, and Friendship Place. Also, Miriam's Kitchen is a huge provider. So, you know, I would encourage you by all means to please call our screening line, and we'll talk through people. If they're not eligible for services, we will make referrals to more appropriate services. So that's one way. Miriam's Kitchen and their drop-in center has been a fantastic partner. They've done several hundred assessments, and it's a very easily accessible kind of drop-in center.
Ben, could you share your screening number?
Yes, it's 202-658-9599.
So that's 202-658-9599.
So thank you. I know we have a question with Board Member Joe Wynn.
Yes.
Good evening. Joe Wynn, Board Member. Just a quick question. What did you mean by functional homelessness? I'm hearing this is obvious in different states.
Yeah.
I just want to see what your definition of that is.
So it varies from place to place. And some organizations, so I will admit that I'm apparently behind the times in using the phrase functional zero. Apparently some folks are moving away from that terminology. But what it means in essence is that if somebody becomes homeless, the ultimate goal is that homelessness is rare, brief, and non-recurring. And I think we've heard that from the mayor's office as well. That's language that's being used across the nation, but I know that Mayor Bowser has embraced that language as well. So rare, brief, and non-recurring. What that means functionally is that if a veteran falls into homelessness, that there is a system in place that will immediately be able to assist them. So we're not quite there yet. If you are a veteran now, you may have to wait a couple weeks, months. It's tough to say because the goal of coordinated entry is to provide services to the people who need it the most first. So this assessment kind of gives you a sense of who the most vulnerable people are. And this is the housing first model. It's something that prioritizes the people who are the most vulnerable, who are the most at risk of remaining homeless. Because we know a lot of people, the vast majority of people that enter our shelters that become homeless figure it out without anybody else's help and never become homeless again. So we want to make sure we prioritize our help for the people that need it the most and who are going to remain homeless but for our services. And that's what we're tasked to do by the VA, that but for criteria. Would this person become or remain homeless but for our services? So I don't know if that answers your question, but the idea is, you know, so just if we can assume that about 50 veterans enter homelessness a month, then if we are housing 50 veterans a month, then we are at that functional zero. But first, we do need to catch up because last year there were 500 veterans homeless in 1 month, and we're not housing 500 in a month. So that number, you know, we don't know what the point in time count will look like in January. You know, it's tough to say at any given time. That's why that's a really important metric, because it's tough to say at this moment how many veterans do we need to house to get there. But we do have this by name list of people experiencing homelessness that we can prioritize.
Quick point, we'll move to the vice chair. We do embrace the mayor's approach, you know, rare, brief, and non-recurring. Mm-hmm. That's what we'd like to see.
Yeah.
And very, very good to hear the details. That, for me, it's very helpful to, you know, the numbers that you're giving. That's great. How do we reach you? What's the best number for you?
For me personally?
And email, website?
Yeah, so Friendship Place is at www.friendshipplace.org. So that's two P's in a row there. As far as just keeping in touch with the data itself, the coordinatedentry.com is the website where things are posted pretty frequently. I heard the Veterans Now initiative named, and that is where this is shared regularly. Every month at this point, or every 2 weeks even? Yeah, so those meetings are where, you know, I think it was for a while every month, and now it's bumped up because we're serious about making this happen. You know, if you do have questions, I'm more than happy to share what I know. I mean, and I'll be honest, I'm pulling on work that a million other people are doing, but I'm always happy to pass things along that I know of them. So, again, my name is Ben Cattell Knoll. My email address is bnoll@friendshipplace.org, and my direct line is 202-306-6524. So B as in boy, N as in Nancy, O-L-L, B-Knoll at friendshipplace.org, 202-306-6524.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
For time's sake, I won't ask that question.
Okay.
I'll pick somebody's brain later.
I can stick around, too, if you need me to afterwards. I have cards as well.
Thank you. So at this point, we'll move to the formal part of the program. I'm sorry, program of the meeting, and we have a quorum. We have 10 board members, you know, who have joined us, and so at this point, I can hand over to parliamentarian, get the approval of the agenda and the minutes.
All board members, do you have a copy of the agenda for today? Should be dated November 3rd. Can we get one for Board Member Wynn, please? We'll give him
second or two to take a look at that agenda. Agenda should be dated today. We've already been through call to order, pledge of allegiance, the roll call. Those of you who came in after the roll call, I believe I've marked you at, attending so that we... I'm trying to be nice to good people.
That'd be one beer or soda pop.
Right.
So. Soda pop.
Don't give Donald nothing. Let him let that joker breathe. So with that, Mr. Wynn, are you good to go, sir?
Sir.
All right. So the board has been presented with the agenda today. Per the chair, it is now time to approve that agenda. The agenda's in front of you. Are there any questions or changes? Madam Vice Chair?
I move to add an item to old business, the election of a recording secretary.
The vice chair has recommended that we add the election of the recording secretary. Are there any other changes, additions to today's agenda? Going once, going twice, no question. Is there a motion on the floor to approve the agenda with said changes? Mr. Brooks?
I make a motion that we approve the agenda except the agenda.
We have a motion to approve the agenda. Is there a second?
Second
by Board Member Dazil, and thought I heard another voice. All right. Finally, are there any more questions on the motion, which is to approve the agenda with changes? The only change we received was adding the election of the recording secretary. Seeing us no questions, the motion is to accept the agenda with the election of the secretary. All those in favor of accepting the agenda with the addition of recording secretary, please acknowledge by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. Ayes have it. The agenda has been approved with the old business in electing the recording secretary. Next will be the approval of the minutes. Have we... There are audio minutes. Mm-hmm. We haven't sent those out, though, huh?
They're posted to the website.
Posted to the website. Okay. Did anybody get a chance to look at those?
Can you find out what the website is for those? I've looked all over trying to find it.
Really? Okay. Yeah, cool.
Can you put it out by email?
Okay. I'll send it to you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You want the website? Oh, is that the Bagel website?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Thank
you. I don't have it on. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So we'll send that out. So what we'll do for next is we will entertain the next in December. We will do the October and November minutes together, so we'll get both of those out. Okay, Chair.
All right, thank you. So at this point, we'll move to the director's report.
Well, I don't have anything very formal, but I wanted to let everybody know that did everybody get a copy of their Salute to America envelope that was sent out? Everybody should have got one, right? Well, that's on the board. So what they've been so wonderful to do is they have invited the entire board to their concert. And it's going to be the Grassroots and Jefferson Starship. It's going to be this Sunday. So each of you have two tickets and a reception ticket as well if you're wanting to attend. So let me know if you're going to attend so I can let them know that you'll be representing the mayor's office on veteran affairs, because I'm not able to attend and the mayor will be out of country at that time. So if y'all will be attending, please let me know. I can get that information to me ASAP, but you have that, you have the information in your, Wanda, you have the tickets. Okay. Great. Another thing I wanted to let y'all know that we have several events that are going on November the 11th, and I am hoping that some of you all will say, hey, I'll attend the event and represent the mayor's office on Veteran Affairs. But if you're interested in attending one of those events, please let me know so I can do, I can let them know that you'll be coming and you'll be representing our office. Does that make sense? So please let me know, because there are several things that are going on. I just want to make sure that someone will be somewhere representing the office. I'd really appreciate that. The final thing is, so there's been a change in the staffing. So we're no longer 4 FTEs. We have 3. So again, I'm asking you all, I know, that you be patient with us, because we're down to 3. And November is one of the busiest months because we are obligated to attend several events. And so again, I'm asking if you all can like kind of fit stuff in your schedule. I'll send the calendar out again of several things that we have going on this month. Not only just on Veterans Day, but other days as well, and hopefully that you'll be able to kind of help backfill us and attend some of those events because there's three of us.
Right. Thank you. And encourage everybody to come out, and actually Sydney's going to remind everybody that the email had gone.
Yeah, we, I and the vice chair have already put out a reminder email out about these events. You should have in your email accounts, and if you don't, please give me your email address so I can get that to the vice chair so we are continually sending out information we get from MOVA and other information for all board members. But we have a calendar right now that goes from November 8th all the way down to four or five events on November 11th. It would be good for us as a board publicly to get out and show our face. Everybody doesn't need to go to the same one. We got enough folks. We can share the wealth and go out. Now, the real intricate part of this for us publicly is that we're letting the MOVA office know that we're doing this so that we won't get extra credit or Scooby snacks or anything like that. But what she can do is ensure that she's telling her higher-ups that her board is functional. Let's be functional, folks. Let's show up and don't show out, but show up and show a good face for all this stuff, okay? If I don't have your email address, if you have not gotten or received an email, get it to me, and I will get it to Harry, to Victoria, and we'll put it on. We got like five or six spreadsheets now, so we'll pull all that together to make sure that every time we get these and any other updated events that our soon-to-be-elected recording secretary will have that information as well to be able to send out accordingly.
Just for the record, Cindy and I have sent out several emails within the last 2 weeks, Cindy.
Yes,
yes, within the last 2 weeks. So if you are a board member and you did not hear from us, we do not have your email address. So make sure you get that. So, but if you are a board member and you did hear from us, then you're good.
I have one question. I think I talk loud enough. The only question is, you will send out a new agenda of all the activities again, because I might have missed that.
Yeah, we can resend it.
Okay.
We can resend it. And also, I want to underscore what Sydney said. Let's all, you know, make as much as we can of these events, and feel free to, you know, talk about which ones you're going to go to. I will actually be out of country. I'm joining the mayor on the trade delegation to China, which happens, you know, the 8th and 11th of those events. I'll be gone from the 7th through the 14th. But also remember when we had our first meeting, we all had a discussion about how, for all board members and for those who are kind enough who aren't board members to participate, it's a team sport, team effort. So please, you know, be force multipliers as well. So it's important for us to show up ourselves, but invite folks to come out to these meetings, reach out through your networks, and just remember while you're there, we're always representing, the veterans community. This is always for that purpose, and we're working. And so we're trying to get, you know, when we go to those events, observe, inspire, gather information. I mean, just be on. And so, you know, I agree with Sydney on that. Yep.
You trying to take you to China with me?
I tell you, don't give them the drink.
I know. Yeah. So yeah, I'm sorry. I'll miss the celebrations here. So, I think at this point, so we've had the director's report. Thank you. Committee reports. I don't think we're skipping that because we're still encouraging people to sign up. We've had some good responses, and I think this is, you know, we'll get there to where we have those committees starting to be active, and those are not subject to the Open Government Act, and so we can, you know, we'll get it organized. That's where the work's going to be done on all the things we're going to do, you know, over the year. Let's see, or a lot more of the work too. Old business. So at this point, you know, bylaws, they were voted on last time. Just to remind people, we had a recording secretary that was included in that. We did not go with a sergeant of arms. It's not required. My understanding is we've confirmed it's not required for us to have a sergeant at arms. So at this point, unless somebody feels strongly, you know, otherwise, we're going to operate without that. We can always revisit it, go through the bylaws to change things. But at this point, we do have a call for a recording secretary. Strategic plan. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. If you don't,
Sorry, I'm going to take over for just a second, and we're going to spend just a minute on the strategic plan. So several of us gathered last week. Thank you for those that came for an informal meeting where we discussed a lot of things and got some really clear insight. I'm so far. Can you guys hear me if I just talk?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm usually pretty loud. So we got some really good insight on what the mayor's office on Veterans Affairs sort of has responsibility for, what their limitations are and what some of their challenges are. And we also got some better insight on what the board can do, which is much, much more. And I'm happy for those of you that weren't able to come, I don't want to talk about it now, but I'm happy to meet with you one-on-one or email or discuss however you want to do that, more of that. But part of what we discussed last week, alluding to this and the responsibilities of both the board and the MOVA, is that we do, we are required. This is not a thing we'd like to do. This is a requirement that we create a strategic plan and submit it to the mayor. And we've talked some about it, so I don't think this is really a surprise to anybody, but I did want to say that this is not just something that Harry and Tammy and I are putting on you guys, right? So with that being said, we have a strategic planning meeting coming up. It's, the date has not been set, but I did send a link out to everyone to tell me when you might be available. Now, we're never, ever, ever going to find a date that works for everybody, so I'm really sorry about that. It's just never going to happen. But I'm going to try to accommodate as many people who want to attend this as possible to have a strategic planning meeting. However, you do not have to attend the meeting to be part of this, right? I sent out the working strategic plan to everyone. I will resend it. I have notes here on reminders I need to send everyone. I will include that. And one of those things is that I asked people to sort of identify area of interest. And thank you. I did hear back from actually the majority of the board I counted just now. I heard back from the majority of everybody, which is great, of areas of their interest. And once you sort of identify those areas of interest, I'm keeping track. Those may, you know, then become subcommittees. We may do, you know, form other subcommittees, however that works. But that's the area of the strategic plan I would then like for you to sort of focus your attention on. And if you have input on the strategic plan in your area of interest and you can't attend the strategic planning meeting, or if you want to provide it to me beforehand, which would actually be great so I can get it all together and we can have something to work from at the meeting, that's where we go from there. Does anybody have any questions about that or the plan or?
A quick comment. Would you consider doing a conference call?
Yeah. So the date we set up, if you indicate your availability, the date that we set up, I will provide a conference call line for that. However, just know that sometimes that gets a little bit cumbersome, so I would like to minimize the amount of people on a conference call, but I will provide that. So if you indicate that you're available and then you can't actually physically make it in, I will provide a conference call line. And anybody that plans to be on the conference call, I would like for you to make sure you do get any edits or opinions to me beforehand just so that we do have them sort of in front of us. That would be what I ask of anyone who wants to be on the conference call. Okay, and so I am going to sort of be the POC for this strategic planning event. So any comments, feel free. We're not doing a forum like we did for the bylaws. Feel free to track changes. Send comments to me. Just sort of indicate where you think they should go in the strategic plan, please, to make my life easier. Bring them to the meeting. Like I say, it would be better just to get everything beforehand if possible. That way we have a starting point at the meeting.
And also, we'll take a look.
We'll also have to consider the open government components of this and you know, how many people are meeting, and we'll just go through that to make sure.
Well, this isn't a formal meeting. What this is sort of a planning meeting. Then we'll present the strategic plan in December, mm-hmm, at the December meeting, and then vote on it in the January meeting. That is the goal.
My only question is, if I'm not mistaken, being on another strategic plan, first, I talk real loud.
Yeah, it's just for the recording, okay.
From my understanding, the only strategic plan has to come up with a vision or mission that we're trying to get, what we're trying to get, and how we're going to go about getting it by taking all the expertise of the different board members and being like an engine toward, you know, solving that mission or accomplishing that mission with the vision idea. Am I correct?
Yes, sir, you are correct. And we've already, Director Lambert has already provided a very, very critical framework to begin from.
I understand.
Let me just help. And what I want to do is not leave anybody else. But what has happened is the last unofficial meeting we had, she outlined some office pieces and missions and vision. And what is happening is we as a board are looking at adjusting what she's already provided to help what she's doing now.
Okay.
And so she has the office, the MOVA. Did I say that right this time? Mm-hmm. Mayor's Office of Veteran Affairs has an overall strategic outlook, mission, and vision from the mayor to create pathways for the middle class. And that includes ending homelessness for the veterans. You've heard it all. I don't have to bore you with that. But she has some critical pieces that we can be advantageous in the mobile office with that if we add into that strategic plan, now we're working to, we're not just functional. We are now success-driven. So that goes to what you're saying, developing our mission and vision in what has already been critically written down so that we're bringing it all together. I took what you said and tried to go a little bit further. If you don't mind.
And Mr. Brooks, I think you do have a point that as part of that strategic plan, we could actually write a separate, as a board, a separate mission and vision statement. And I think all that could be, you know, at least moved forward in this meeting that we plan to have and via email communication as well. So I think you do bring up a point that maybe we should look at adding that.
So let me just kind of throw this out here. So the mayor's vision is creating a pathways for the middle class. So I would just highly suggest that your strategic plan should be about creating the pathways to the middle class for the veterans.
Sure.
I'll jump in on the chairman's side. Obviously, we do support having a pathway to the middle class. It's part of it. But we have, we'll come back to this. I will be right there along, obviously, in all of this, for the chairman's role on it. Our job is to advise the mayor on how we can improve lives for veterans. That includes all aspects, family, economic, social, everything. And the committees are going to come to it, but in the interest of time, we are going to move forward. But, I'm in China I told you all the days I'm going to be gone, but we have definitely a lot of work to do. The committee's going to be activity on it. So encourage, thank you for coming out. We will come back to that. And Sydney, I'm sorry, in the interest of time, ethics training, if you haven't done it yet, get it. I got my training. It was good. And so emails. We have the information for that. You can ask Sydney for help. We also have, I think we can, Sydney, you'll be available, right?
Sure.
On that, recording secretary, I understand that we have a volunteer. I'm just going to jump to it. Unless somebody else, is there anybody interested? Because the one volunteer we can put forward for recording secretary, unless someone else feels strongly that they would want to do it. Okay. So then I can reveal. So, Stephen, are you still interested in being the recording secretary?
Available
to
serve.
Thanks. Okay. So, we have 5 minutes. We don't have any new business. We've covered it all. So, we could move forward with voting. Okay. So Mr. Parliamentary?
Yeah. So, now up for vote. Election is the recording secretary. As per our bylaws, that should be a majority vote. And we'll do that by ayes and nays. Is there a motion on the floor for a candidate for recording secretary?
I move to nominate board member Giselle.
I second.
Yeah.
I second it.
Been moved and properly seconded.
It's been okay. You're the man. It's all good. It's been moved and properly seconded. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, the motion on the floor is to elect Stephen Dazell, board member, Ward 6, to the recording secretary position as stated in our bylaws. All those in favor of electing Steve Dazell, the recording secretary, please acknowledge by saying aye. All of those opposed, say nay. The ayes have it. Stephen Dizer has been elected our recording secretary.
Thank you.
All right. Congratulations and thank you.
And get with Tammy after this.
It's public comment. Do we have any public comment? Anyone interested? We're going to hang. I'm sorry. Yes, two minutes each. Yes, sir. If you would please just come up to the front and
please say your name and ward.
Yeah, and just so we know, are there going to be any other folks who want to comment after? Okay, sir.
Before he begins, sir, all public comments will be abruptly or urgently stopped at 2 minutes. We cannot display the clock, so we will go by iPhone stopwatch at this time per parliamentary procedure, and that's meant out of love. Thank you so much. Mr. Johnson?
Good evening. John Johnson, Department Adjutant for District of Columbia, Veterans of Foreign Wars. We were invited to attend this council meeting just to discuss upcoming event, imminent event, our annual Veterans Day Ball held at Bolin Air Force Base this Saturday at 6 o'clock, semi-formal attire. It's an opportunity to network with other veterans. Our desire is, and this is as a result of the POW-MIA ceremony when we had a bunch of vets standing around saying we ought to do something in D.C. Well, this is our second time around, and it's growing. It's a little over 100 people, close to 120 last year, 100 people. So it's growing, but it's an opportunity to spend an evening with vets, honoring vets. I guess our theme is our theme is honoring our Iraqi and Afghanistan vets this year. You know, so every year the same thing, and I brought tickets. $65. As with everything else, fundraiser, you know, to put into our coffers, and take care of our veterans, families, and the communities in which they live. I represent the Department Commander, Ms. Roseanne Clark, past Department Commander, Clint Townsend, and we are so fortunate to have your distinguished panel, our VFW Department, D.C. members, Tammy Lambert, Director, and Sid Locks, you know, board member. So, if you want tickets, see me. I've got them right here. You can pay at the door. I'll give you a ticket, put it in your hand, and I know where to find you. So,
thank you, Mr. Johnson. God bless. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
All right. So, do we have any other public comments? All right. And so, upcoming events. I think we've already covered.
I want Joe to talk about his upcoming event.
Mr. Wynn, a board member. We have exactly 2 minutes, actually.
All right, good afternoon, evening.
Evening, sir.
I'm Joe Wynn, board member. One of the events that she may have been referring to, Till Duty Calls, is an event that's going to be held at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut, November 10th and 11th. And it's primarily a veterans career fair, and also it's an outreach event for veteran small business owners. It's a free event. There are a number of large sponsors who are participating in the event, and proceeds from the event will go to help develop a housing project in Connecticut, in Hartford, Connecticut. So I'm looking forward to participating in that. There's also another event on November 6th that's being held in Dallas. There's a new organization called a Coalition of Veteran Business Owners. And this is primarily to promote the opportunities for veteran business owners throughout the country. This will be their first. It's a summit held in Dallas, Texas, on November 6th. Also a free event, but you got to get there to both of these events on your own. All right? Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Wynn.
So free was always free.
So let me think.
Cover the travel, right?
All
right.
So did everybody get one of these? Okay, so what we've decided to do in support of Serve DC and our community at large, we wanted to put together a veteran readiness team. So I'm asking each of you all to consider or recruit people to join our veteran readiness team. And what we do is, in helping the community, what we do is we help their elderly. Like when there's snow days, we help them shovel their snow. Fall leaves, we help them rake up their leaves and bag it up. In addition to that, if we have an event that we need veterans to show up, we would like to be able to kind of like call on this group and say, hey, this is going on. It'd be great if you show up. I mean, if you participated or if you showed up there. So if you're interested, please let me know. In addition to that, I would like for you all to kind of push this out, because at this point I think we've only had 23 volunteers, and I know we can do better than that. We have 31,000 veterans in the district, so I need your help to get this information out. But I think it's a great cause, because we need to support our communities at large.
Thank you, Director. And also one last comment is, if and anyone can get in touch with me if you have a question about it, but Fort Myer Construction is looking for female veteran drivers. So what they found is that women who have been in motor pools or have driven for the military are able to handle the snow conditions, because they do the clearance of the, you know, Fort Myer covers the beltway during snowstorms. We're expecting a heavy winter, and they are, this is an urgent and immediate request, and it's a chance to help, our veteran sisters who may have that qualification. These are good jobs that are ready. And, you know, so that's Fort Myer Construction, Louis Shrinsky. You can reach right out to Fort Myer, but this is an opportunity that's right here for female, veterans who have heavy equipment driver's license. So,
Could you, email that information to me, since I am an employment specialist?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah,
or if somebody, I've got my email, we can do it. You know, I'm still learning how to fly it since I got assigned for the committee. But yes, anybody who wants to get in touch, just put Fort Myer female vet jobs on the subject line, and we'll get you connected. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Actually, at this point, we're adjourned, right?
All right.
Oh, motion to adjourn. Okay, so we have a motion to adjourn. All right. Second. All right. Thank you. Keep me straight. All right. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Was. I have an informal announcement. I didn't want it on the record.